Hello there, and welcome to the podcast. It's John Markar here, and I thought I'd just jump in with a very quick but very important message that I wanted to share with you before you delve into this episode of the Driven Chat podcast. This podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now come to an end. But don't worry, I'm not going to stop you from listening to this episode or from catching up with the 185 episodes that we've recorded in this format. I just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for our new episodes recorded after December 2023, then you'll need to seek out our new podcast, The Driven Podcast. You can find The Driven Podcast in all the usual podcast platforms, including, chances are, the one that you're listening to this one on right now. So please do enjoy this episode, share it with a friend by all means. But when it's done, don't forget to search for the new podcast, The Driven Podcast, and subscribe to the new format to hear the new stuff. To make life easy, head on over to the Driven website via driven.site. There you will find links through to the new podcast, including links to your preferred podcast platform. And hey, whilst you're there, why not check out everything else we do, including hand-picked automotive news stories, car and bike reviews, video features, and even more. For now, though, I'll let you enjoy this episode, and I will remind you again at the end of the episode, but for the future reference, this message is approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds long. That's 6 clicks on the 15-second skip button. Enjoy!
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Driven Chat podcast. My name is John Markar. Sat beside me in our little makeshift studio is...
Amy Shaw. Again, always forget that you're going to do that.
And a voice that, although we did hear you a couple of weeks ago, we've missed you. Andy J.
Hey, hello, guys. Yeah, I've come back. I have missed you guys badly. I mean, those people that listen to the podcast week in, week out and don't realise we've got a radio show won't realise that we three are still together every single week talking about car-y stuff.
That's true.
It's just that you guys get to do more for the pod and I've got to do more of the nerdy stuff for the radio show, which means I'm not as available for the pod, which I really miss because this is the fun one. Because you have longer chats and you can say things like poo and wee, which we can't do on the radio.
It's true. It's very, very true.
John says poo and wee all the time.
I feel like I don't say it enough, actually. I don't say it enough. But hey, look, I thought, let's get us all together. Admittedly, Andy, you are remote. You are we're linked in via FaceTime. But due to the wonders of technology, the listener doesn't know that. It's amazing. But I thought, let's get us all together because this, I feel like I need some sort of fanfare. Rubbish fanfare, 100th episode!
Yay!
Oh, look at that.
You can tell who's the real professional here.
Live audience there. Real, definite real live audience in our amphitheatre of a studio that we have. We've been building up to this for... 100 episodes. And in my head each week I've been thinking, oh yeah, we'll definitely do something huge and amazing and there'll be fireworks and stuff. But as is the way, you know, we have actually got a production company to run and two radio shows and other podcasts and various other very boring things that our dear listeners don't need to necessarily hear about, which means that it can actually be quite difficult to plan big kind of eventy things. But I thought it would be sacrilegious if we didn't all get together and say a quick hello and perhaps recap on some of our happy memories before we then just fold into another episode of the Driven Chat podcast, which is exactly what we're going to do in about 8 minutes.
We did have a debate about whether anyone listening would care that we're 100 episodes in. And then we thought, well, actually, some of you are amazing and have been with us from the very early stages. I mean, from like... Some of you can even remember the very first few shows where we had the lovely John Quirk with us, who of course had his wings clipped by his company that said, no, you can't do a car podcast and express an opinion. So he unfortunately had to leave because he got told off by the people that he works for. So some of you will remember that and have been with us for a long time and will realise why we wanted to just mark 100 episodes, because it is massive. I mean, one of the other shows that John's referring to is my Celebi Chat Showy thing. And for that 100th, which was a few weeks back now, I was panicking. I was like, well, what do I do? Because the guest I had lined up for it wasn't particularly exciting. And then thankfully, Harry Hill showed up and I was able to put him in, and that was a relief. So that was cool. But yeah, we got to mark it because we've done some crazy things in last 100 episodes. It's been nuts.
It has been nuts. And I think the thing to point out, so I'm trying to cast my memory back to June. Was it June 2020?
June 2020, I think we first sat down together. Nearly 2 years ago.
So since the first ever episode went out, we have released every single week a new episode. We have not stopped once. We haven't stopped for Christmas. We haven't stopped for Easter. We haven't stopped for any other reason, including us going on our own holidays. We have found a way to bring you an episode every single week. And in fact, we occasionally have brought you more than one episode a week because we've done bonus content for somebody who's really wanted to get some information out or a story out beforehand. So I think we all deserve to give ourselves a little pat on the back, really, because it has been quite the thing. We started this mid-pandemic. We were able to record together, and then we weren't, and then we were again, and then we weren't. So we've done this in person. We've done this in our studio truck. We've done this at Caffeine and Machine. We've done this sat on my sofa. We've done this in all different aspects via FaceTime and Zoom and via all sorts of different forms of technology. And 100 episodes, it feels pretty special. I'm very, very, very chuffed.
It does feel really special. And as you said, when you kind of lied out like that, it's so much stuff has gone into doing this. And this is something that when we all started, I mean, Andy, you're brilliant and you've done loads of this already. John, you've done quite a lot. I had never done anything like this before. So for us all to still be here and hopefully enjoying it 100 episodes later, I think is wonderful. And some of the people that we've got to speak to as well, I mean, I never thought I'd be speaking to people like inventors. That was a recent one, wasn't it? We spoke to an inventor.
Neil Barron,
You know, ex-SAS, amazing, cool story people. People who've ridden motorcycles around the world. And just, I think to myself, every time I meet one of these people, I'm like, this is really cool. It's really cool I get to do this. I'm so happy about this. So, no, I mean, it's awesome. I'm really excited to see who we can chat to next and to re-listen to some of the chats that we've... I suppose did maybe 50 episodes ago or something like that.
Yeah, indeed.
It is nuts when you think about it. I was just having a little kind of think as Amy was talking there about the various things we've done. And let's not forget the truck, the Driven Chat truck, our studio on wheels that we've been in come rain or shine. We've taken it to some crazy locations. I mean, we've had it down on the South Coast with Ewan Thomas, the Olympic athlete. We've had it at the Silverstone Classic where it bucketed down with rain and was basically leaky. We've had it more times than I can remember at the Joyful Caffeine and Machine, which has just been a spectacular home for us and like a second home on many occasions, which we've absolutely loved. And we've taken it to Wales. We've hung out with Drew Pritchard and Amy had a rainbow Bentley to delight him with. You know, there was all kinds of silly things we've done. We've been up the Brecon Beacons testing our cars out. We've attempted to deliver a smoky, sexy shoot with an eye paste that failed miserably, but nonetheless was a lot of fun. And I got burnt in the process, but it was fun doing it. You know, we've had a fascinating time. We've been to Jaguar Classics and hung out with David Gandy driving. I mean, I can't even remember how much his car cost, but it was an uncomfortable amount of money. And Amy decided to get behind the wheel and drive it.
Honestly, you know, I think that was my best day of my life, genuinely. When I was driving in his XK120 with Gandy in front and an XKSS and Andy, you behind me in an E-Type. And I just thought, how the hell have I got here? This is brilliant. I never want to leave.
It was insanely cool. Yeah, that was a hell of a day. And then we went to GTO Engineering. Who can remember that day? Yeah. Holy moly, that was fun.
Yep.
Yeah, it has been incredible. And it's so difficult to think back. I do often find myself, obviously, being the person that does the uploading and things, I often scroll back and just look at the list of the names, the celebrities that we've spoken to, the personalities we've spoken to, and the adventures that we have been on to provide content for this wonderful podcast. It's it is great fun. So I guess a huge, huge thank you to everyone that has taken the time to listen. If you are one of those people, if you're in the 100 Club, we can call it now, that's listened to every single episode that we have to offer. I met somebody recently at the Goodwood Members Meeting that says he's listened to at least every episode at least 3 times. Wow. Now, that is incredible to think that
that's more than me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. More than me, and I edit the damn things. Yeah, no, it's been incredible to meet so many of you out and about at events. And please, 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 please don't feel shy to come and say hi, because there's no feeling in the world that compares to when you're at an event, especially in the car world, and somebody walk over and go, oh, hi, just wanted to say I really enjoy listening to the podcast. It is the best thing ever. So a huge thank you to everyone that's listening. I want to say a massive, massive thank you as well to some of our behind the scenes people. Tom Kent, who is our audio producer. He effectively takes a bucket of noise from us each week. And because, you know, starting out up until I think around sort of maybe the 70 or 80th episode, I was doing all the audio editing myself and was just winging it, not having a clue what I was doing. Crash courses in Adobe Audition on YouTube every single week. To be able to pass the editing over to Tom has just been amazing, and he has made certainly my life a lot easier. But yeah, he's definitely helped us all as a team. So yeah, huge thank you to Tom. And then, of course, some amazing other people behind the scenes that have been with us along the way. People like Luke, who's one of our videographers and cinematographers, and he does all of our lovely drone filming. He's done incredible things. Richard Fulbrook, who is our in-house editor, video editor, comes with me most days on our kind of any days out where we're driving cars and doing fun things. Rich is often there with his cameras, going, nope, do it again, nope, do it again, because I've stuffed up a line of some sort. So a huge thank you to Rich. Amber as well, our production assistant. We talk about Amber every so often on our social feeds, and we reference her occasionally on the podcast. A huge asset. She joined us back in June last year and has been a huge help to us all. I'm sure I'm forgetting people, but Phil and Alexis and various other people that sit behind the scenes and help us and enable us to do what we do and create what we create. We are so grateful to you all. And hey, here's to the next 100 in whatever shape or form that may be, whatever outlet we end up kind of pushing forward on. It's been a journey, and long may it continue.
It has been terrific. Guests that have stood out for you guys, because I was having a think about who do I remember as being a really great guest that's kind of stood out, either because he or she has made us laugh, or because something was really cool about it, or whatever. Who sort of rings in your memory?
Go on, Amy. I'm sitting back because I need to think about it.
There's just loads for different reasons. Sometimes we've chatted to people who I've thought, oh, I'm not too sure about this, and then loved it afterwards. Mm. I think for me, probably the Jay Morton one I really enjoyed. Just because I just thought this is a whole different way of thinking, a whole different kind of lifestyle I would never have even considered, and never will be in. So that was really interesting for me. I think some of the bike ones for me as well, like Elspeth and Jackie. It's that was really, really inspirational. What do you think, John?
It is amazing. I mean, for me, there's been so many people that I've spoken to, personalities from the automotive world, as journalists or writers or TV presenters.
Richard Porter. You love Richard Porter.
I mean, I kind of want to say we're friends now, which is quite cool, because we've bumped into each other a few times at various events. People like Porter, who have been a massive inspiration to me over the years. And he listens to our podcast, so he will be listening to this, and he'll hate that I'm being gushy. But, Richard, as I said to him in the podcast recording, was a personality that, despite the fact he was very much behind the scenes in the world of Top Gear and writing, and, of course, I Sniff Petrol, I was very much aware of who he was and wanted to kind of get myself into a similar working world. That's definitely one that jumps out to me. But like you say, Amy, sometimes it's the conversations you aren't expecting to be as dynamic as they turn out to be have been great. So people like, Neil Barron, who we spoke to, the inventor, that was a fantastic conversation. Charlie Borman, we went to his house in Barnes. We sat on his dining table and recorded a podcast with him.
He made us all cry.
Yeah.
And certainly made me cry, that's for sure.
And then he like ripped up the road on his electric Harley Davidson. It was amazing. More names than I can care to mention. But some hugely brilliant people and some massively supportive people as well, who've been on as guests and then have continued to listen or continue to keep in touch. People like Mike Brewer. We cannot, of course, avoid mentioning Mike. Mike's been with us.
We absolutely love Mike. He's a proper friend.
Yeah.
He's a great, great guy.
And I think we cuddler as well.
He does love a cuddle,
doesn't
he?
He loves a cuddle.
But we recorded with Mike first on the podcast. I know, Andy, you and Mike have been friends for a million years, but we recorded with Mike for the first time when he was still in LA, whilst he was doing Wheeler Dealers out there. Then he came back and recorded with us in person, and then that turned into a bit more of a flourishing friendship. So, I used to watch Mike Brewer on TV when I was about 11 years old, and now I'm working with him. It's just incredible. It really is incredible.
A couple of names that I'm going to throw at you as well.
Yeah, go for it.
because I'm sure this one is going to make you both smile. One of, I think, the most lovely conversations we've had was with Ian Callum.
Yeah. I love that episode.
The nicest man in automotive by a million miles. He's just solid gold, isn't he?
And possibly the best voice. Oh, I like to like just caramel. To listen to. Yeah, it is. It's like melting chocolate. Just really, really great voice. Yeah, Ian Callum, what a star. What an absolute star. Julian Thompson as well on the designing front. Again, just so inspiring to hear people that have designed, physically actually drawn, sketched out some of the most iconic cars that we love looking at on the road. And yeah, we've had them in our ears.
We have. And on a Top Gear theme, the Andy Willman episode was really interesting. I thought he was absolutely riveting. And of course, we've also had the other Wheeler dealers, Ant Anstead and Mark Priestley, Elvis, as he now is known in his new world. Yeah. Magnus Walker in LA joined us in that crazy Zoom link where he talked about how he'd never had a laptop before, the madman. Dear Uncle Magnus. I mean, we've spanned a huge, huge number of people. And the great thing is, the merry-go-round continues. There's just so many more chats to have, so many more conversations. And because so much time has changed now, from episode one through to now, we can have people back and there'll be lots of new things to discuss. It's great.
Absolutely.
I'm very pleased we're doing this. So yeah, wish I was more involved in the pod than just having to do all the other side of the business side of things. But you guys, I've got to say, I'm so proud of you both. You're doing an amazing job. So thank you for continuing with your excellence and your endless energy and boundless enthusiasm. It's a joy to witness.
Well, a big thank you, really. I think it's essential to you, Andy J, because without you, we wouldn't be sat here doing this. This was your idea. This is all your fault. And we got a. I very, very, very fondly remember getting a phone call. I think one early Saturday morning. I think I was having a line, and the call even woke me up. And you were like, "Have I just woken you up?" I was like, "Yeah," and I'm not even going to pretend he didn't. And it was this.
It was about 11:45.
It was. It really was. It really was about that time. It was mid lockdown pandemic Saturday morning. Was it Saturday morning? Who knows? It was one of those who knows days. But yeah, a phone call saying, I'm thinking about doing this. Do you want to get involved? And yeah, here we are coming up 2 years later, which is amazing. So a huge thank you to you, Andy J. And thank you for all the work you're doing behind the scenes, which is the stuff that the listener doesn't see or really know about. But yeah, in relation to our radio show and various other media links and things that go on, it isn't just a magical machine that happens. It does involve hard work, and you are the one doing it.
Truly is the boring stuff, I've got to say, compared to the fun stuff, which is what I thought I'd be doing, joining you guys on the chat. I'm only sidelined because I'm trying to keep us going, but it's great. And like you say, to echo everything you've said, thanks to everybody that you've appropriately name checked. And of course, to our wonderful listeners, you know, you guys are brilliant and we really, really appreciate it. I think we should probably get on with episode 100 now rather than any more backslapping, don't you?
Let's do it. Let's get on with episode 100, which is some content I recorded a few weeks ago at the Goodwood members meeting with our lovely friends at Bonhams Auctions. I'm delighted to say we're going to be doing more stuff with Bonhams at all the Goodwood events in the future. And here is the content that I recorded from the members' meeting auction just a few weeks ago.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
At the moment for this opening, I was hoping I'd be standing with my colleagues around me, with an Andy J, an Amy Shaw, and perhaps a few of our production team. But it's just me. But that's okay, because I am surrounded right now by the best looking classic cars I've seen in quite a long time. We have once again been invited by the wonderful people at Bonhams to come down to Goodwood. And the event we're at is the Goodwood members meeting here in the lovely month, sunny month of April here in the UK. And the Goodwood members meeting is the third event on the Goodwood calendar after the Festival of Speed and the Revival. The members meeting is the first event that happens in the year, but the third event that came along on the calendar for Goodwood. And it is a smaller, slightly smaller scaled event in comparison to things like the Revival, in which the circuit is used for some competition motorsport. You see a collection of wonderful cars, a collection of wonderful racing drivers, and of course other activities such as the auction that happens around. And that is where we are standing right now. We attended the auction at the Goodwood Revival back in September last year, 2021, and we're back now, 2022, for the members meeting. And we hope, all being well, that we will also be attending for the Festival of Speed and the Revival later in the year. Now, I'm going to walk around this wonderful marquee full of fabulous cars, and I'm going to grab a couple of people to talk to. And the first person I'm going to speak to is a chap called Paul Darville, who has a fairly senior role within Bonhams.
essentially being in charge of all the European auctions. Paul's going to walk around. I've picked out three cars that I want to talk about. No doubt I'm going to get distracted and want to talk about more. But Paul and I are going to walk around now, have a look at some of these cars, have a talk about some of these cars, and to keep an eye on what we're talking about, have a look at our social feed, Driven Chat on Instagram. You will see all the cars that we're talking about in great detail, which have just all been uploaded. I'm going to take some photos and some videos. I'm going to upload those, and they will be available today on the day that you're listening to this episode. So for now, let me disappear to a little jingle, and when I come back, you'll hear my voice once again, albeit slightly different on a different microphone, but I'll be with Paul Darville.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
Right, it's Friday evening, and I am currently standing in an extremely large tent. I don't think we can even call it a tent. It's more of a gazebo. Maybe there is a posher term for it, Paul. Is
marquee.
There a
posher?
Marquee, good.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think of that word. Yes, I'm standing in an enormous marquee draped with the words Bonhams, and that means one thing and one thing only. It means I'm standing at the Goodwood members' meeting the day before it all opens up, the day before it all kicks off. Because once again, at a Goodwood event, we have been so kindly invited by Bonhams to come along and have a little look at the auction. This time I'm quite delighted because we were able to get in a day before it opens up, rather than battling through the crowds. And I've grabbed Paul Darville, who has very kindly, willingly, Paul, or you were volunteered.
Yeah, willingly, let's say. Let's
perfect.
Say.
That's very kind. So, Paul, why don't you tell us who you are, what you do for Bonhams, and the significance of this weekend?
So, my job is to be the European Auctions Manager for Continental Europe, actually, but that also brings me, of course, to our UK sales. I've got a great position. I get to do all of our sales globally at the moment until someone looks at my travel expenses. So, pleasure to be back here at Goodwood in the spring, in our marquee. Although, now you mention it, in the high wind yesterday, it did feel more tense than marquee. I have to say, it does move quite impressively when the wind gets up. So, you'd be forgiven for calling it a tent.
Thank you.
So, you're here on our setup day. You're sort of in the kitchen before the restaurant opens, seeing all the preparations as they happen.
Fantastic. And yeah, I did hear reports of slightly strong winds on the day before. So that's the Thursday, meaning you couldn't even get cars moving in until the evening. Is that right?
Goodwood Health and Safety locked us in here for 5 hours yesterday because there was flying debris. Which was nice, you know. But sadly, the alcohol hadn't arrived, so we were forced to work and do condition reports on cars. But we had lots of time to line things up inside very, very neatly yesterday. So time well spent.
Fantastic, excellent. Now I've picked out, Paul, three cars that have jumped out to me in this auction. It's always an impossible task, especially in audio form, trying to bring people content from a car auction. There's the reliance on people hoping they know what I'm saying and what I'm talking about, that they even know what a 550 Maranello is. However, I've picked out three cars that to me personally, quite selfishly actually, have jumped out to me that I would love to know more about. And as we're walking around this beautiful marquee, if anything else jumps out to you, like for example, an Aston Martin we're standing beside, which I hear used to be owned by Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant indeed,
incredible.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's a Aston Martin Vanquish.
Exactly, it's a Vanquish, the car that sort of saved Aston Martin in that period. I know there were several cars in Aston Martin terms that have saved Aston Martin, but I think the Vanquish was a turning point for the mark, and it's actually aged very, very well.
Oh, it has. Yeah.
And nice condition example with a little bit of Hugh Grant history on there as well. His name is in the service book.
Fantastic. And does that sort of thing add value? Does it add a significant value to the car?
This is quite a common question, and I suppose it's a difficult thing to sort of define, actually. It's one of those things actually an auction's great for. You know, an auction will determine whether it adds value. I think more often than not, it adds interest rather than value.
That's a
for
good
that
idea.
To add value, we've got to find an Aston Martin enthusiast and collector who is also a big fan of Hugh Grant for it to really, really make a big, big difference. But it adds interesting. It's bragging rights down the pub. You've got Hugh Grant's Aston Martin Vanquish, and that surely has a value.
Indeed, love that. Okay, perfect. Now the first car that I've picked out is one that I can see, so that's going to make our lives easier. So we're going to walk over. It's taken, I think we can fair to say, it's taken centre stage within the marquee, and that is a rather beautiful 3-litre Porsche 911 with, well, what I can only describe as multiple years, many years of rally heritage stuck to it, quite literally stuck to it in the form of decals and
a lovely layer of mud and dirt. What can you tell me about this, Paul?
Exactly. Well, we are, I realise, an audio format here. So I do wish people could see this car, because this car has 40 years of battle scars and mud and scrapes and dents, and all the better for it. I think we believe this car to be the Porsche with the longest competition life of any car that we've seen from the mark. It's done three times around the world in competition. It wears a lot of battle scars, and I think it is all the more appealing, as I say, for those particular marks all over it. We've deliberately left it muddy, because there is a fantastic video, which I think you've seen on our website, with a particularly enthusiastic member of our team driving the car. Very, very gamely, I must say. We didn't have to force him to do that job, I must say.
No. I can't imagine that there was much in the way of protests. We need you to come out and drive a Porsche rally car on a rally stage and make it messy and dramatic. Yeah, that's the kind of question you do want to be asked in the office, isn't it?
Exactly, and I was always a big fan of rally. It's great to see these cars getting a bit more appreciation. I think 10, 15 years ago, rally cars were probably a bit of a peripheral interest, I think, in our collector's world. That's definitely changed. Group B has led the way, of course.
Yep.
And then Group B has become fantastically collectible. But that has tended to generate more interest in historic rally cars in general. Goodwood have taken that on as well. This car was shown at Festival of Speed, where you've got that wonderful rally stage up the top. Always my favourite bit of the Festival of Speed. Away from the crowds, you can have a beer up there. And I can't do this anymore, I work for Bonhams. But in the old days, before I worked for Bonhams, I would go and shelter up at the rally stage when I wanted a bit of a break from the festival crowds. And so these cars really are gaining an interest, and deservedly so. I think there's no... In terms of driving skill... Something's always amazed me to see someone drive a car like this at significant speeds on multiple different surfaces over long periods of time. It's one of the most impressive driving abilities I think you can see in motorsport.
Absolutely. So the base of this car, this is a 1970s 911?
Yes, it's a 77 model. You've put me on the spot.
Sorry,
here now.
I'll try not to catch
it. It's a 76.
It's a 76. Close, you were very close.
Prepared in 77, of course. let's say. It was built for the London Sydney Marathon. So built Fantastic. Very, very early, straight away into a historic rally car. And it's been a rally car since 77. And has done enormous numbers of miles as such. Great to have a Martini livery on it again. I think the other part of the appeal of this era of rally cars is that those iconic liveries, often related to alcohol or cigarettes, let's be honest.
Absolutely,
the best
yeah.
liveries.
Fags and booze
exactly.
tend to be the best sponsors
produce
for motorsport.
The best paint jobs on any historic racing car. But if you come round the car, the bodywork's heavily sort of scratched and dented, and you've got every scrape and run down it, but it's also the floors. You see where rally cars really pick up damage.
Yes.
The number of times those floor panels have been replaced, I can see a bit of light through on the passenger side. But when you talk to rally drivers in the period, as periodically we're lucky enough to do, the talks of those improvised repairs on stages, the punishment that cars have to go through, particularly when they're doing endurance rallying like this car did, is really quite staggering as to what they can put up with.
There are two things that are jumping out to me on here. Firstly, in reference to the on-the-road repairs and maintenance, I can see what looks like a bamboo cane in the back seat with some red tape on various levels. That, to me, as somebody that spent quite a lot of time driving old cars with unreliable fuel gauges, indicates that it's probably some sort of fuel level measuring stick in quite a primitive form. And I'd like to think that that's been in there for some time. The other thing, as I close this door, the other thing that jumps out to me is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Goodwood Festival of Speed stickers that are on this car. So that is, as you say, signifies that this is a car that has competed at Goodwood, that's been on display and being driven at the rally stage up the hill.
I mean, look at this lovely bit of duct tape added on there. It's like every great endurance rally car should be. It tells the story of every adventure somehow.
Absolutely. I should point out the duct tape that Paul's mentioning is actually holding the rear right-hand side indicator onto the car.
It might just be for security.
It could be.
It
for
might
security.
Not be doing all the work. I like to think it's just this additional safety measure.
Absolutely. Now let's talk value, because 911s over the past few years have just been skyrocketing from pretty much all iterations and eras. But this era especially, I can recall only
5 to 10 years ago, cars like this were selling for £15,000 to £25,000 in this shape, not necessarily a rally spec, albeit, but they have since skyrocketed. This car, in this condition, covered in stickers, dents, bruises, duct tape and dirt, what are we expecting this to sell for this weekend?
So we've got an estimate on here of £200,000 to £250,000.
Wow.
But I suppose it's interesting because you talk about 911 prices and you're right to pull that up as an example, and definitely there's been a growing interest in that mark. But you've also got this is a car that crosses into, as I said, that historic rally market as well,
yeah,
which has also been very, very buoyant. I suppose for a historic rally car with that sort of level of extended competition history, that's probably the more affordable end these days.
Yeah.
I suppose you could look at a car from the 60s, something like a Healey 3000 rally car, brilliant, accessible, very, very competitive historic rally car that can be really well prepared, lots of great experts in them. But if you've got a 3000 with a great history, it's quite a lot more than £200,000 now.
Absolutely.
And certainly, you know, the 037s, Stratuses are well up in the stratosphere by comparison. So it's, on the face of things, might look quite a lot of money for a 76 911. But then you apply the rallying element to it and the parameters of historic rally cars, I think that's a very interesting and, I mean, I hesitate to say affordable. We do get a bit, we do get a little bit out of touch in this job at times. So I'm not going to say affordable, but you know, an interesting car for the money,
yes.
Let's say. You know, you've got a lot of history there for not much more than, say, a flat floor E-Type.
Very
completely
very,
different
very
car,
well,
but it's an interesting, interesting parameter to think about.
I know what I'd rather be driving, and it's the one we're standing next to.
But you won't get an invitation to Goodwood Festival of Speed in a lot of cars for £200,000.
That's
another thing. It's the event you can go to with that car.
Excellent. And as we move on from it, who do you think is going to be buying this car? Do you think it's going to be someone that's going to continue using it as a rally car?
I think so. I think that is a really interesting car. Someone will have a lot of fun with it, and it will get them invitations to things. They'll have opportunities to do things. I mean, for example, I was talking to a client last week in Germany, and we were saying, why have we never been ice racing? You know, there's a question right there.
Yeah.
That's an answer to the question, why have I never been ice racing? I think it's, of all the cars here today, the car that you may well find you have the most opportunities coming out of, and the most fun in them, as many places you can possibly imagine.
Amazing. Excellent. Right. 911 done. Fantastic thing to walk around. My next car, I believe, is outside the marquee, which is, again, it's a very selfish choice because it's a personal favourite of mine. And I was very pleased to find, before we hit the record button, that it's also a favourite of yours, Paul. And that is a specifically Tour de France Blue Ferrari 550 Maranello. Now, we're walking towards the door of the marquee, and I haven't yet seen it.
So we knew you liked him. We sold it before you got here. It was outside. I can see it over here on our right.
Having walked outside, the first thing that we see from a car auction is a very small speedboat. Is this a common occurrence?
This is not a common occurrence. I mean, occasionally in Monaco you might have the odd Reaver, but this little speedboat was used by the Duke of Edinburgh.
Oh, really?
So this is why it has a little bit of additional interest and why it's here today.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, here it is. I've just looked over to our left and I can see this beautiful Tour de France 550 Maranello. There is something very special. There's always something very special, I find, about Ferraris that aren't red, for a start. But Tour de France Blue, for me, and I know for a lot of people like me, is the one to go for if there was an option. What can you tell me about this lovely 550?
Unfortunately, in both liking this car, we've revealed our ages, as we've established.
We have.
So this is our era of Ferrari, unfortunately. So for all the listeners out there, you now can guess that we are in our mid-30s. So it's, as you say, a fantastic colour combination. Blue Tour de France, very, very elegant colour on this particular body shape as well. I think there's something a little bit... This car I like because it's sort of... It's a modern classic, if you like,
yep.
But it does hark back to those 60s Grand Tourers. There's a lot of design cues in there that are very, very Daytona. There's a little bit of 275 in there. It's a very well-designed and elegant car. The interior as well, with these Daytona inserts. I like the fact on this example that it's not a black interior, it's a slightly off-black blue interior, which matches so nicely with the blue Tour de France. This one here... sort of ticks the boxes in terms of having a great service history, limited ownership and low mileage. And it's an up-and-coming modern classic that's still, as we were saying, again, I'm going to say it again, I'm going to say it's relatively affordable, but only relatively, as we said. And the servicing costs, as we established, I was trying to talk him out of it.
Yes.
Might be a little bit less affordable. But this is great. You know, you've got the servicing done. It's been cared for over a long bit of time. So if you're going to get into a 20-year-old Ferrari, this is probably a good place to start as any.
And just on the subject of value, because, again, we've been looking at, and like many, many, many people that will be listening to this, I spend a lot of time shamelessly looking at classified adverts of cars I can't afford and probably never will be able to afford. And there's always that list of cars that you end up going back to. The 550 Maranello is one of those for me. Now, I'm slightly surprised that these aren't a lot more money than they are. This one, I believe, is got an estimate of 60 to 80?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Now, in my head, I'm thinking surely this should be a lot more. It's a V12 front engine, rear-wheel drive, Grand Tourer, looks beautiful, it's a Pininfarina car. Why isn't this £150,000 to £200,000?
I suppose we're probably a little bit on the cusp of this coming up. It's true, production numbers were relatively high, and for, you know, dynamically, by contemporary standards, this is not as sophisticated a car as, I don't know, a contemporary Ferrari, certainly, if you look at, compare this to a Roma.
Yes.
It's, you know, the world has moved on incredibly rapidly. But I think we're probably on the cusp of this moving forwards a little bit, and probably prices will rise despite the high production numbers, because people will become increasingly selective. The ones that have the missing service history, the accident damage, will start to fall away, and really nice low mileage examples with good histories should start to appreciate a little bit, I must say.
Okay.
I think we're saying the same thing about 360s.
Yes.
Just saying that I still look at a 360, particularly a Challenge Stradale, and think that that is probably quite an undervalued car in some ways.
Yes, I agree. So what you're saying is we need to go and buy these now. We somehow need to find that money, buy them now, and then maybe 10 years' time, we're in the money.
And I like the 550 or the 575, because the 575 with the auto box feels, because that technology has moved so much, that almost feels more dated than the manual gearbox 550. So I think, for me, it's a very, very nice car to own, and you never know, you may make some money on it, although I would never say guarantee on that basis.
Very sensible, very, very sensible. And yes, absolutely, your comparison to the 575 makes me feel like we are, again, alarmingly well aligned. Right. Paul. So let's venture back inside. I'm just going to point out some of the cars that we're walking past. A rather lovely Healey 3000, which is wonderful.
Lovely Healey 3000, another historic rally car.
Yes,
isn't
of course.
You'd have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
Nicely prepared, hard top, it looks the part. Okay, it's not a period competitor, but really does look the part, and I think that's great value.
It is, absolutely. I'm also looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rather special Aston Martins, all slightly different.
Yes. We are going through a run of Aston Martins at the moment.
Yeah.
Some great period colours here.
Yes.
So I'm not going to know the paint colour. I'm sorry. I should do. I've got a primrose yellow over there. I can always spot, of course.
Primrose yellow. That's a 5?
That's a DB6.
6, damn.
Yeah, that's a Mark II DB6 over there. We've got a V8 with this sort of...
Yeah, how do we describe it? It's very similar in a way, slightly darker than the BMW Dakar yellow that we... Phoenix yellow that we saw on the sort of mid-2000s E46 M3.
That's too niche for me.
Sorry.
That's really... You've gone too far. it's gold metallic. And we've got a fantastic sort of aquamarine blue six-cylinder DBS. Actually a car that I think is looking quite nice these days. The six-cylinder DBS is a little bit more elegant than the V8. Trouble with these cars is that they were not really worth a great deal up until relatively recently. And so the quality of restorations on them, particularly if they were bought 20 years ago, tend to be subpar by contemporary standards, unless you're lucky to find someone that really loved it and threw money at it regardless of any rhyme or reason, basically.
Fabulous.
But that's a nice one. And there's a beautiful olive green DBS over there, which is a particularly nice period colour as well.
Yeah, fabulous colour. Fabulous. Yeah. Right, should we venture back inside? Because there is a rather lovely, again on that Aston Martin theme. Thank you. Just skip ahead. After you. Thank you. So I believe we're now looking for a DB4.
DB4, which I think has moved actually closer to us, because it was over there, wasn't it?
Very convenient. I thought it was on the other side of the marquee, but it's here. So I'm looking at an Aston Martin DB4 amid the sound, glorious sound of an XK Jag just rumbling around. Now, to describe this car, we have a DB4, if you're not aware, and by the way, we will have all the photos of the cars that we're talking about will be on our social media feeds right now. So you can, if you want to, just find our Instagram feed and have a look for the Bonhams post. You'll see all these cars here. But this DB4, in case you're driving along perhaps or out walking the dog, is a glorious green. I don't know what this colour would fall under, but this is one of the iconic greens that I would always opt for if I was buying an Aston Martin. We see a full roll cage. We see one seat. Does this indicate to me that this has been used in some form of competition, Paul?
Exactly. So this car was prepared by R.S. Williams to go racing in the Aston Martin Owners Club Series.
Brilliant.
Which was back in the mid-2000s, very, very active series, very popular series, with a lot of pretty impressive wheel-to-wheel racing in it. So fully race prepared, some 15 years ago now. And will require some recommissioning, of course, to take back to the track. But it really looks the part. We've got big flared arches on it, sort of semi-slick, sort of slight. I'm not quite sure they are FIA standard tyres on there, I have to be honest.
No.
But yeah, it really does look the part. And as we come inside, nice,
oh, it's beautiful.
Nice period style bucket seat in there. Again, I think you could probably prepare a few details here now. If you're preparing this car, you might change around in terms of the look, but there's no doubt about the intent, and prepared by one of the best names, if not the most famous name in the Aston Martin world, famous R.S. Williams, 4.5-litre engine. It's clearly, when it was built to a very, very high standard.
Fantastic. Quite the track day toy, isn't it, if you wanted to be a bit different to everyone else?
Absolutely. No, I think it'd be quite entertaining to take this out on a track day and try and scare a few moderns.
Now, value-wise on this one, I'm guessing this is not a road-registered car, or am I wrong in saying that?
It is not road-registered, no.
Okay. So this is just a toy. But I guess potential to get it road-registered if you were so inclined?
It depends on how friendly your local MOT station is, I suspect. I suppose, hypothetically, you could soften it down a little bit to make it drivable on the road. It would have had a road registration when it was built. The semi-slick tyres, that might be a slight issue.
Tyres are easy. And
none of us live, there's no speed humps where I live in London. Any speed humps? No, no.
Yeah.
But in principle, it's a perfectly road, it could be made road legal again, I should think.
Yeah. Fabulous. And estimate on this one. Sorry if I'm putting you on the spot.
This
there.
One We've got is £160,000 to £200,000.
There you go. So do you want to buy a GT3, be like every other track day driver with a GT3, or do you want a fantastic race-prepared Aston Martin DB4?
You'd struggle to make it for that, that's for sure.
Exactly.
In
fact, you'd probably struggle to even get a GT3 for that sort of money. This is better value.
This is better value. Is that your buyer? That's your consumer advice for today? Is
yes.
Buy an Aston Martin DB4 race car. Forget a GT3.
The handling characteristics.
And daily drive it, maybe.
Yeah, daily drive it. Whack some trade plates on it at the very least for now, and then worry about the MOT later.
Your neighbour's going to love you with these exhausts on it as well.
Oh, I bet. Fantastic. Well, Paul, I've dragged you away from what is quite a busy afternoon. I'm sure you've got a lot to prepare for this weekend. Before we go, and before I leave you to it, and perhaps collar you again tomorrow for some quick words, is there anything that you're really quite excited about in this auction? And I know that's probably an impossible question to ask, because you can sign the most beautiful cars here. And on a weekend like this, at the Goodwood members' meeting, it's going to be a huge set. It's going to be very popular. What is the one car in here, if you can pick, that you're quite excited about?
It's funny. I think sometimes you see a room of cars, and it's not always the valuable things that you're drawn to or the most obvious things. But it's always a pleasant surprise when you walk into an auction room or you get your catalogue through and you're looking at the pictures as we're consigning. And actually, in this sale, there is an Alvis 4.3 over there.
Uh-huh.
A car you would walk past.
Let's go towards.
But it's got such a pretty body on it.
Uh-huh.
Disappearing hood. We should take the roof down. When you see the roof down, it's very, very elegant. Not a fashionable car, of course. No, not a car that you would say is the thing you're going to read about in the magazines, is the thing to invest in the future. But a very, very elegant body on it. When the hood's down, it becomes a very streamlined, very 1930s, with a little bit of continental influence with these disc wheels on it. And I look at that and think...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If that body was in a Bentley, that would be an incredibly valuable car.
Yes, you're right.
It's on an Elvis, and it's not by a well-known coach builder.
Okay.
And therefore, you've got a relatively affordable, but really unusual and very attractive and usable pre-war car.
Fantastic.
So it's certainly not the one that, if anyone's going to ask me, what should I invest in, which is always a question I sort of avoid. But my heart absolutely goes with that Elvis.
Fantastic. And what are we talking about value-wise here? What are we estimating?
You are putting me on the spot now.
Well, whilst I do that, I'm just going to point out to the listener as well, I've noticed there is a rather beautiful pocket watch mounted on the centre of the dashboard, which I'm guessing would indicate that perhaps this has been used for some sort of spirited challenge, whether that's actually on a circuit or just a bit of fun around somebody's land. I hope it's the latter. But it's a lovely thing to see.
We're at £180,000 here.
Well, there you go.
So it's possibly unique, coach-built, pre-war car, technologically advanced. You've got a synchro gearbox, so if you're not an experienced pre-war driver, an Elvis is a very good place to start. Brakes are good for the era. good for the era. You see how I did that there? Yeah. I hedged that a little bit. No, they're the sort of thing that you get very, very used to. And again, £180,000. You're in E-type money here.
Yeah.
It's probably not the most obvious thing you were going to jump to, but a really interesting car.
Yeah.
And a very attractive one as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Paul. I will let you get back to work because I know you've probably got an awful lot to do. I'm going to continue ogling for a little bit. I'm going to take some little photos and videos of the cars that we've talked about. And all being well, today is Friday. All being well, we'll see each other again tomorrow. We'll both probably be a bit more prepared for a nice long day. I mean, I've got the easy job here. I'm just walking around with a microphone. You're going to have a full day of actual grafting, aren't you?
Well, I think that's the principle of it. Yeah, I mean, I can't guarantee.
And what we'll do as well, we'll also include, because of course we're recording this before the auction, we'll do a bit tomorrow when the auction's on and over the weekend, I'll upload all the sale prices as well in the blurb below so you can have a look and include a link to the Bonham site so you can see all of these different lots that we've been talking about and see all the lovely photos in greater detail as well. Paul, I will let you get back to work. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
Good morning. I say good morning. It's actually midday at the time that I'm recording this and you're listening to this at who knows what time. Good day. Good day to you. John here at the Goodwood Members Meeting, an amazing weekend full of motorsport, full of sights, sounds, smells, people, exciting people, amazing people. We are here, of course, with Bonhams this weekend and have done loads of fun stuff in the Bonhams marquee, looking at the amazing cars that they have. We will be bringing you that content in this episode, so you've got that to come. But as well as that, I'm also going to be walking and talking with my handheld microphone, looking a bit like a TV presenter from the early 1990s with a big handheld microphone and seeing who I bump into. And fortunately, I have found some people to bump into. I'm going to walk over to a lovely little shop and without any warning whatsoever, I'm just going to interject. Hello, Reverend Adam Gumpertz.
Hello.
How are we doing?
I'm all right, thank you. It's very nice today, isn't it? It's lovely weather.
They do call it glorious Goodwood.
They do.
And the weather is glorious.
I can see why. Yeah, no, it is absolutely stunning.
So this is quite nice. I was just walking around the grounds, and over in the distance, I saw a little shop with a sign above it saying Auto Artist for Ukraine.
Yeah.
Look at this. You've got your own little setup.
We've got our own Ferrari as well, which is rather nice, a Daytona. We only found out about 3 weeks ago that we were getting the slot here. So we've been, Johnny and I have frantically been kind of tracking down people and who've been very good to give us a whole load of art on top of the art they've already given us. And we're here selling it. So exciting.
That is really, really exciting. Now, when I came over, just to spoil the illusion of recording, thinking, so the listener thinks this is all spontaneous and I've walked over from a distance, but you broke the news to me that something rather exciting has happened over the past day or so with regards to money raised.
So certainly, I mean, we're on track, I would say, without having done the reckoning of what we've taken so far, but we're on track probably over the weekend to break 40,000.
That is unbelievable, isn't it? So that's 40,000 since you got started.
Since we got started, and it's all down to people's generosity, the generosity of people who've obviously bought artwork, the generosity of all the artists who've donated artwork, the generosity of everybody here at Goodwood to allow us to be here. You guys as well, because you pushed it and publicised it. You know, we said, I think, on the podcast when we were with you, we're just two blokes who had an idea, thought we can do something with colouring in, and everybody else has got behind it. And here we are at Goodwood with a Ferrari Daytona and selling work. It's been incredible.
And what's the response been for people that have walked in so far? I mean, we're only just gone midday on the first day of the weekend. Are people coming in having already heard of you, or is this a new thing to a lot of people?
It's a mixture of both. We've had people coming up and saying, what's this all about? So we've been able to talk to them. We've had people coming and saying, I've seen you on Instagram. We've had people coming and saying, we heard the podcast on Driven Chat. Didn't realise you guys were coming. Really good to see you. So we've had a whole mixture of stuff. And the nice thing is that, you know, we've got here displayed a whole range of artwork at different price points. So it's accessible, but there's stuff people can bid on as well. So, I mean, I don't think Johnny and I have actually sat down at all since we started this morning. So,
We haven't had breakfast yet either.
So, but it's just been incredible. And what's been really, really nice is the conversation. So I got chatting to somebody who used to live in the Ukraine and is obviously very concerned about what's going on. So really good to hear about those stories. We've got other people who've got relatives or friends, or they've got contacts in Ukraine. So it's just been incredible from that point of view as well.
Amazing. Well, I wish you the best of luck over the weekend. I'm sure that lots of people are going to be coming in, spending their hard-earned cash for a fantastic cause. And perhaps I'll check in with you perhaps tomorrow. Yeah,
talk to him, because he's absolutely brilliant. We came in yesterday and we literally arrived. We got told we only had until about 5:30 to set up, and Johnny Ambrose just set to with his drill and his and what you see is the result of Johnny's kind of, right, this is where it's going and this is what we're going to put up, this is how we're going to do it. It's perfect.
So Johnny, come on then, step in. So you're no stranger to setting up the occasional exhibition or gallery.
It was a case of need, really. We got here in good time, because of things, we only had about 2-3 hours to set up and sweep out the place and things like that. But it was all about just getting the artworks on the walls in a kind of semi-cohesive pattern, so that it's, just it set off the works, nice and vibrant works to trap people in. Nothing to say anything of the rather vibrant Daytona that's set outside, of course, you know, which is just fantastic to have that.
Also conveniently in yellow with blue accents, which is quite fitting to the message we're going for here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. It was when we found out that we could have this, it was just like, oh, crikey, yes, this is just perfect. And with the race livery as well, it fits in so well with Goodwood and the meeting. And I must admit, I've always loved the retro graphics, love the Marshall cat. It's just of an era, you know, so it just looks so great.
Fantastic. Well, I'll let you continue ogling that, or more importantly, attending to the lovely people that have given their time to come in here and hopefully spend some money and buy some stuff. So best of luck over the weekend. I'll check in with you again perhaps later on today and maybe tomorrow and see how you're both handing up. Maybe, shall I bring anything I can bring? Coffees, biscuits, cakes?
Oxygen, yeah. No, I mean, a massive thanks actually to you guys at Driven Chat, because, you know, you've helped us tell the story, and lots of other people have too. And I think that's the wonder of the community we're all part of, that word gets around and people want to help. And so it's just been fantastic, hasn't it?
Great collective effort from absolutely all the artists and all the supporters like yourself. Can't thank. It's a numerous list. We've got to thank everyone afterwards.
Our list is getting bigger and bigger every hour, almost, it seems.
But no, it's really fantastic that everyone's kind of pulled together.
It is. It is. Well, I'm very, very proud to have done a tiny part just in helping spread the word. So, and as I walk around today, I'll try and direct a few more people in here as well for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Cheers, John.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
I'm currently, I think this is a first, certainly a first for me. It may even be a first in radio recording history, because I am sat in a racing car about to give an interview to a good friend of the show, Mr. Drew Pritchard. Hello, Drew.
Hello, mate. How are you doing? Thank you for coming to see me. Find me in the pits.
Well, you said, come and find me in the pits, which I've done. We were, just to kind of set the scene for the Goodwood members meeting, the pit garages, if you've not seen them before, are effectively an open space full of racing cars. A lot of these racing cars are just about to go out on track, so therefore there's mechanics doing final bits of tinkering, there's engines running, making sure that the cars are running smoothly, so lots and lots of noise. So we decided the safest place to record would be inside your racing car, and I will let you do the intro as to what we're sat in. So, tell me about this lovely car.
We are sat in my 1958 Volkswagen Beetle race car. And we built this initially 7 years ago. It looked more of a show car, wasn't really a race car. We didn't really know what we were doing. And then a year later, we took the entire thing apart, redid it all. Ian at Wolfberg Performance Services and Andrew Hobday took the car apart, rebuilt it, and we've been altering it, preparing it, working on it, you know, just it, year in, year out. We've had a lot of lows, like a lot of mistakes, a lot of money's been spent on engines and things that have gone wrong. I don't know how many engines now, I think we're on engine number 5.
Oh, wow.
But now it's right. We can't, this is it. You know, when you get something, you think, we're there, this is pretty much it.
That's really cool. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I can recall seeing a Volkswagen Beetle racing at the Goodwood Revival or the Goodwood Members Meeting before. Is this a special rarity?
No. The last Volkswagen Beetle to race was in 1958, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I was the first one to race again in 2018 at the Members Meeting. This was the first time we took it out. Uh-huh. Since then, it's been to the Revival twice and now back to the Members Meeting. So you're not watching, John. We've been there, we've been doing it. But we didn't always finish, I would say that. We didn't always get round.
But what I meant really is to see a Volkswagen Beetle racing car here, this is, I think, the only one I'm aware of. Is that right?
It's the only one in the country that races in historics, yes. There are Beetle Cup cars, there's lots of drag cars, there's lots of hill climb cars, but there's nothing that's set up for classic circuit racing. There's nothing. Nobody's stupid enough. To be perfectly honest with you, you'd have to be really daft and just throwing money at it, because I just really wanted to do it. You know, I've had Volkswagen since I was 18. Never been without one, without an air-cooled Volkswagen since. And I just had to build a race car. And this, you know, it was a really stupid idea. It was a colossally stupid thing to do, but we're here and we're having loads of fun with it.
Well, all the best ideas tend to be the most stupid ones, don't they?
Yeah.
So you're used to driving around. I think a couple of times I've seen you driving a rather lovely Porsche 911, probably not too dissimilar in era, maybe 10 or 15 years apart.
10 years newer, the earliest 911 I've got. I'm in a 911 today, in my 993 C4 manual.
Wonderful.
As well. So that's a recent addition to the collection. They get under your skin. Cars with the engines in the wrong end, they get under your skin, they really do.
What are the handling characteristics like in this lovely old Beetle in comparison to the short wheelbase 911 you've got?
I don't know. Handling characteristics are not really... I don't know if it has them. It's sort of, we're all right, we're all right. Oh my God, we're not all right. I think it's that. But we've got a trapeze bar set up on the back now. We've got two 356 sway bars that we've melded together to and camber compensators on there as well to try and control it. So it's about as controllable as it's going to get. But into the big right handers, I still have to slightly flick the car and on off the power to unsettle the back end to get it out. So you're very much at that point steering with the back of the car, and it's really hard. And, you know, I am with racing, I'm enthusiastic but rubbish. So, you know, that's what it's constant learning curve, but it's hard and it's really scary, to be perfectly honest with you. It really is a scary thing to do.
Do you feel like you're getting more into the swing of things? Like, does it become a bit intuitive, or is it still just as scary each time?
It's just as scary each time. But what happens is you just stop thinking about what you're doing and where you are and just do it.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're okay. So I've just been out, did 20 minutes, I got two fast laps in.
Wow.
And on the second one, I didn't even think about it. And I had it, and it was just right. So for that split second, it felt right. And with all the racing, you just have to those split seconds of getting that corner right, then the next place right, and the next place on the track correct, and that gear shift correct. And it's 1,000 things to do in a split second. It's completely engrossing.
And tell me about the cars that you're racing against. What else have you got around you in the field?
I've got a two-stroke Saab next to me, which puffs out more smoke than a power station, and it's loads of fun. But the guy's really nice, and he's built a very, very accurate replica of an old Le Mans car when these two-stroke Saabs run there.
Wow.
We've got a Renault 4 CV next to us. There's a Peugeot 203 four-door saloon next to that. A couple of Morris Minors, a Minx. There's a standard Vanguard. I mean, it's all the weird cars that really shouldn't be race cars are here, and that's what the Sopwith Cup very much is about, and also the HRDC, which I'm a member of, the Historic Racing Drivers Club. It's all those oddballs who just don't want to race something normal, just having a go in something really odd and making our life... You make your life really difficult. I could have just gone and bought, like, a Lotus Cortina or a Mini Cooper and just gone out and enjoyed it and had no problems, but this is continual development and loads of fun and nobody else is doing it. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, no, it is good fun, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the wonderful thing about the members' meeting as an event is you are surrounded by all these amazing cars from multiple different eras. We've got everything from Porsche 917, Le Mans racing cars. We've got F1 cars currently out on the circuit. You can probably hear them in the background. And then the Weird and Wonderful, which is... I think this is what this category falls into, isn't it?
We should be called the Weird and Wonderful. It's quite... But you know what? It's competitive. And some of the boys, the brothers who race the... I think one's in a standard Vanguard, one's in A35. They're so quick.
Yeah.
Those boys, you're just getting out of their way. There's two huge Jaguars out there as well. But I'm you know, I hold my own where I am. And if I get tomorrow, if we get to do a little bit of a dice with somebody, you know, get into your own race, you know, with just one or two of the other guys, it's great. One of the guys with the Morris Minors, I always have a really good dice with him.
Oh, that's good stuff. And outside of the cars, once the race is finished, is it all good spirits and camaraderie in the pit lane?
Yeah, it is. It's good fun, and you've got to be. We're all here to have fun. There's no prizes. There are prizes, but there's no championship.
Yeah.
We're here for the day, for people to look at the cars, enjoy it. You've seen how open it is. People can come right up to you. And it's just a good laugh. I was here on setup yesterday with Marino, and we just spent that entire day wandering around, looking at cars, chatting to people, having a burger and a coffee. It's a great event. I love anything to do with Goodwood. It's a very special event.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that, didn't we? The last time we spoke here, we were sat at the Revival in one of the hospitality tents there, and you were explaining the same thing, saying it, and you're so right. Is there's something about the atmosphere of Goodwood that is unmatched to any other motorsport meeting anywhere in the world, and that goes for the Revival, it goes for the members meeting where we are now, it also goes for the Goodwood Festival of Speed, the hill climb. I don't know what it is or why it is, but there is just something so very special about being here, isn't there?
There is. It's like a little bit of Goodwood magic, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got other favourite tracks. I love racing at Alton Park and Donington, right? They're both just some of my favourite tracks, which are a bit more favourable to this car. The car's sort of geared for those tracks, but there's a little bit of Goodwood sort of magic dust sprinkled over everything when you're here, and it's like the sort of Glastonbury for cars. You know, it's a bit mad, and you don't know what you're going to expect. And you walk around a corner, and there might be a Lola parked next to a standard Vanguard. Yeah. You're in a Porsche 904 cruising by. It is one of those places where you get to see cars you'd never really see. But for me, I love to go and look at the car parks. And on setup yesterday, a lot of the drivers were bringing their own cars in. Some of the stuff that turns up there, wow, really, wow.
Yeah, no, it is. It's magical at all angles. You're so right. Walking back to the car park, often once the event's finished, you'll see some stuff there that's just as spectacular and special as the stuff you've been seeing driving around. Now, in a fantasy world, before I let you get back to it, obviously seeing the other array of cars that we've got here at the weekend, is there anything here that you're looking at and thinking, God, I really would love to have a go in that?
Merino is out in the big Skull Bandit Porsche. Right, I would love to have a go in that. There's a couple of Lolas over there, but be perfectly honest with you, there's a 904 Porsche or the GT, what, an early GT40. There's so many. One of those two. GT40. I'll take one of those out. Full chat. Love to have a go.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fair shout. Flat plane crank V8 ripping around an iconic circuit like this is special.
Oh, no, there's some Rover SDIs out.
Ah.
And they're insane. Have you heard the noise?
No, not yet.
Incredible. And the Capris. One of those. I'm changing my mind. What am I doing?
Well, we'll conclude it before we can get any more conflict thrown in. But Drew, thanks so much for your time. Thank you for accommodating me in your lovely little Beetle. This has certainly been a first for me, and I wish you the best of luck. So the remainder of today, you got more qualifying to do or more testing to do?
That's it, I'm done. So it's cheeseburger, cup of tea, wander around, and then we got the party tonight. Is there a party tonight? Is it Saturday?
It's
tonight, yeah. So I think they've got a band on, so we'll watch a bit of that.
Fantastic. And then the big race tomorrow.
Big race tomorrow. Can't look. We're out about 10:30 tomorrow morning, I think. So hopefully it's dry. Hopefully there's no frost and we get round with no damage. Nobody gets hurt. I'll be really happy.
Fantastic. Drew Pritchard, thank you very much and best of luck.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
Welcome back to the Bonhams Marquee. I say welcome back, but to you as the listener, it's probably a couple of minutes at most that since you last heard my voice. But for me, it's been a solid 24 to 48 hours. Feels like possibly 7 days. I don't know. I've completely lost track. What I can tell you is that we are approaching the end of the Goodwood members meeting. We are, I think, now on the final race of the weekend. They're just in Parc Fermé now, about to go out. And what has also concluded is the Bonhams sale. The auction has gone through. I have found a very, I don't want to say tired looking Paul, but a very hard worked Paul Darville, I think is fair to say, who has been working very hard in putting the auction through. How are you feeling at the end of this weekend, Paul?
Despite the way I look, I feel pretty good actually. Thanks very much. And I think, you know, as the listener, yeah, time has moved on quicker, and it'd be a sort of a montage, I think, between where we were before. If we were doing a film right now, there'd be some frantic music, a lot of running around, and here we are at the end. A great feeling of elation at the end of the sale.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I've been trying to keep track on some of the cars that have been going through, but with so much going on outside and motorsporty things, and this is a huge social event, it's been quite hard to keep track. But now that the sale has concluded, I managed to come in just about halfway through to see some of the last lots go through. I thought it'd be good to have a quick recap with you and talk about some of those cars that have gone through. So we picked out the brilliant Rally Porsche 911, the amazing DB5 track-prepared car, and the completely self-indulgent 550 Maranello that was parked outside. So should we start with that Porsche 911? The sale went through of that this afternoon. How did that go?
It went very well indeed. Well, I think we picked three good cars. They've all sold, so that's good news for the sake of the radio and for the sake of the auction house, of course. So our 911 sold for £207,000, including our buyer's commission, and is returning to its native Germany.
Oh, that's fantastic. And do you think that's going to, any clues as to who it's going to, i.e. are they going to continue using it as a rally car like we hoped?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I was dealing with a broker, an agent representing the client. It was a three-way phone conversation on the phone with a bit of German translation going on in the background. We were trying to slow down the bidding to give the gentleman I was speaking to time to speak to his client. But certainly it's going back to northern Germany, and hopefully it will come back here and be used in the way it should be. I really hope it will be.
Yeah, me too. It's such a fantastic thing to see. And yeah, I really hope that, as you say, it goes to the right home and we see it back on track. Now, the next one we saw, or the next one we're going to talk about, was the amazing DB5. And again, just to remind you, dear listener, all of these cars, we have little 60-second videos of it. I've put them up on our social feeds today, on the day that you're hearing this. If you're hearing this
2 years later, then, you know, good luck scrolling back and finding it. But they are all there. The beautiful DB5, track prepared, roll cage, bucket seat. Did you say it was the Aston Martin Owners Club Racing or something along those lines?
Exactly, yep, exactly. And I think that car's gone to the States again, you know. International bidders here today. Again, I think the buyer of that car is intending to return it to the track. Going to keep it in the UK, re-prepare the car, and it's found a good home. So I'm fairly certain that that car will be out on track again and has certainly gone to a good home. Spent quite a lot of time with the buyer here yesterday, going through the car, trying to understand what could be done with it, and it's gone to the right owner.
Fantastic. So you actually had the conversation, the build-up, you consigned that car as well? No. Oh, okay. So you met the buyer, pre-bidding, talked them through it, and that must be quite a rewarding feeling when the hammer goes down and it's somebody that you've lined up.
You get quite invested in these things, actually. I think when you work with a buyer over a period of time, there was a buyer here today who bought one of the DB6s, someone I met several months ago, introduced by a friend. We've talked about DB6s on a couple of occasions. He came here today, and you get quite emotionally invested in it to a degree. You really want your clients, your buyers, to win the lots, and you like to then follow the story of the cars. And sometimes you get to see these cars resurrected, restored, and you handle them several times through their life, which is really great fun. It's great fun to follow, meet people through the cars that you're selling.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I'm struggling now to think what the estimate was on that. Can you remember it?
We were somewhere around one. I am tired now. I'm going to confess, I am tired. I think we were around 180 to 250 on that particular car. So it did well against estimate. And so the important thing is that someone's going to enjoy and use that car, having seen it in storage for such a long period of time. It's great that it's returned to the track.
So go on then. Tell me, what did the hammer go down at?
I don't remember off the top of my head, because that figure we've written down there is for the DB5. So this is a technical glitch, listeners. We've looked at the wrong car. The DB5, which was another car we glanced at, I think, on our circuit yesterday, but we didn't talk about specifically, which was a really original, untouched restoration project, great history file, and that was one of the big sort of surprises of the sale, actually, because we'd estimated that at about 280. Which is a rational sort of estimation for a DB5 that requires some investment. But there was a father and son in the room that fell in love with it, wanted to restore the car, and they bid that particular car against the 280 estimate to £506,000. But a real emotional purchase, and when you look at that car, I totally understand why you would fall in love with it and feel that you have almost a duty to restore it, enjoy it, and return it to the road. So we made a mistake when we were looking at our results. I've looked the wrong one down, but also another nice story from today's sale.
It is a nice story, and I think I was stood relatively close to you at the time that they were bidding, and I thought, oh, this does feel extra special. I had no relation to this father and son at all, but just the fact that they were standing beside me as they were bidding was quite a special moment. It's quite a nice thing to see.
Yeah, you see a hobby that's passed down, I suppose, as car enthusiasts, both of us. You think about often it's passed on from father to son. My father wasn't particularly a car guy, but he was hugely encouraging to me when I started getting into this. And I remember similar things and going to look at cars with him. And you see that in an auction room, father and son, father and daughter. And it also pulls at the heartstrings, because we've all kind of been there.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this weekend, despite doing bits and pieces here with Driven Chat and having a nice kind of social weekend as well with lots of other people, I've been walking around with my dad. It's been lovely. It's been one of these traditions. We've been doing it since the late 1990s, and since I was at knee height asking, what's that, Dad? What's that, Dad? And now it's kind of gone the other way around, and I'm telling him what everything is, which is quite exciting. Now, the self-indulgent one, the one that hit a real soft spot for me, and I was delighted to also hear that it hit a soft spot for you, was that gorgeous Tour de France Blue 550 Maranello. The estimate on that, I thought, was about what it was going to go for, which I think was like 60 to 70, around that sort of figure.
I think that's the car we both wanted. We both walked around this room, and we talked about it. It was our generation, the one of the sort of poster cars of our era. Yeah, the estimate I felt was about right. We were about £80,000 to £100,000 on that particular car. Lovely colour combination. I always look at these things and think, annoyingly, if I like it, my taste is not bad enough. And undoubtedly, if I like it and you like it, there's undoubtedly a couple of other people who have looked at it in the same way. And sure enough, the 550 went for £97,000, including our commission. So a good result for the car. I'm not sure where that one's ended up. I was with the underbidder. He was really, he's now in our club, you know, he's texted me and said, sort of regret not going again, but hey, that's part of the fun of the auction. You make the decision in the moment, you might err one way or the other, but yeah, a good result for that car, and you know, we better buy one soon, because that's an ominous result for you and I.
It's so true. It is a fantastic result for the car. A terrible result for you and I, who was hoping perhaps it was going to go for 50 grand. That was going to be the market value, and we might find a way to buy one day. But yeah, if they're slowly creeping back up above that 100,000 mark, perhaps in a year or so, then yeah, this could be the one. We tipped it off. Earlier in this podcast, we tipped it off that it was going to be the one to go, and we were right.
Oh, absolutely. But it's a slightly difficult moment for us, because I think you're always chasing that next thing and whatever it be. I'm chasing Clio Williams, and they were always too expensive, and now they are even more too expensive than they were 5 years ago. And there's always one of those cars that you look at and think, one day I'm close to that, not so far away, but it's always moving faster than you are. one day,
absolutely. Or we'd go halves, have shared, like timeshare or something.
That's never gone wrong, has it?
No, indeed. So the auction's done, all the cars have gone through. I mean, it's fantastic to see the atmosphere of the auction room as it goes through is really exciting. But tell me now, what happens next? Because we're in this enormous marquee. I originally called it a tent when we first started recording on Friday evening, which feels like about 8 weeks ago. But what happens now with the marquee? Do these cars stay here overnight? Does it get unloaded tomorrow? Tell me what happens now. Can you rest? Can you relax?
The behind the scenes bit is always quite interesting, I think, because sometimes you see this venue pop up. You know, as an auction house, we are in some ways in the events business as well. And within 48 hours, this marquee won't be here anymore. Overnight, the cars will stay here because the event's still rolling on. Tomorrow morning, the team will be here early. We'll start unloading cars. By 1 o'clock tomorrow, there'll be nothing left here. The set team will come in, they'll dismantle everything. And by 5 o'clock tomorrow, there'll be nothing left here apart from the marquee team taking the actual building down. And it's always the same way in these auctions. You know, we just did a sale in Paris in February. We decked out this huge space at the Grand Palais Éphémère. It was spectacular. And I watched it from start to finish. We loaded in, there was nothing there. And then within 3 days, you were exactly back as if you'd never been there, never set foot in the building. And it's quite miraculous, really, to see the transformation. And yeah, our work here doesn't end when the hammer falls on the last lot. We've got another 24 hours here to make sure everything's loaded out. Goes now, most of the cars will go to storage. Some will go direct to buyers if they've had a chance to pay for them. And some will go on to shipping hubs to be exported to the USA, to continental Europe. So there's a huge logistical challenge that now begins to move simultaneously, 78 cars here. Sometimes, some of our sales, it's over 100 cars that you're moving within a day in and a day out, and the whole thing moves on again. And we'll be doing it all again 13th of May in Monaco. So it's you've got to enjoy that pace, and you've got to enjoy the logistics element to it and the event side of it if you're going to work in the auction business. But it's still quite good fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. And does anyone... this might be a completely ludicrous thing to ask, but does anyone bid on a car, buy a car, sort the funds? Is anyone able to drive the car home from an event like this?
In principle, yes. I mean, we're a Sunday, so today, no. But if we were a weekday sale, if you can pay for the car, transfer the money, it has to hit our account and sit with us at that point. You can prove you've insured yourself on the car. You can drive the car away. Now, honestly, with these sort of cars, we're dealing with classic cars, some of which have been in storage. My advice to clients is always, don't do that. I've definitely done it myself, but if you're willing to do it and you want to do it and you understand that the car is untested, untried, and you want to drive it home, yes, you could do it. I think it's never particularly sound advice, sadly. Romantic as the idea is, and we've definitely all had that thought, go to the States, buy a car, drive it across the country. I'm sure the reality is probably a little bit less glamorous.
Once you've found yourself at a port filling out customs forms and carnet forms, that the magic disappears. Yeah,
don't do any of that, definitely not.
Right, I mean, amazing. Paul, thank you so much for your time. One of the things that we are really looking forward to now, because we've got a lovely partnership that's building now between Driven Chat and Bonham, specifically with the Goodwood events. And I know you mentioned you're in Monaco in a month or so to run that auction, but you're also now looking ahead to the Goodwood Festival of Speed. And there is still an opportunity. So for anyone that's listening, thinking, do you know what, I've got a car or two that it's time for me to let them move on, and perhaps the hassle of a private sale seems a bit daunting. What's the advantage here in getting in contact with Bonhams now and saying, do you know what, Festival of Speed seems like the perfect point of sale for my car. It's going to have the right captive audience, perhaps something a bit sportier, something along the lines of a supercar I think is quite well fitting for the Festival of Speed. How does that process work? What should people need to do?
They should contact our office in London, our car department there in New Bond Street. We're still consigning for the sale in Festival of Speed. And yeah, it could be about maybe wanted to have the sale managed by another party. You know the car's going to be sold on a particular day, and you know you're going to receive the funds at a certain point. But I would also say a lot of my clients enjoy the auction process, and it's an experience selling at auction. You bring the car to an event, you get to partake in that event, you get to see the car, and you play the game a little bit, and you see some of the magic that can happen in the auction room. We were talking about that DB5. The vendor of that car was willing to sell that car at £280,000. People here today in the market, the people who came to Goodwood members meeting, thought it was worth over £500,000. And if you want to be part of that and be part of the experience, part of the event, there's nothing like an auction. It's not going to be for everybody. I fully accept that. I say that to clients. Sometimes it's not what people want to do. But I think it's a very fun way to sell a car, and a way of selling a car where something magical can happen. Very rare in your life, you put your house in the market. Maybe the house is a bad example. Generally, if you advertise something at a price, you either get the price or you get less. An auction is the only sort of circumstance you can sell an object, agree to sell it at a price, and potentially get more, and sometimes dramatically more. So it's a fun experience, I think, and I would encourage people to come and see our sales, come and look at them online. We broadcast everything live, of course, so you can follow the sales. And if you're interested in selling at auction, contact the team in New Bond Street. We're consigning for another 8 weeks or so. And the Festival of Speed Sale is a great, great auction. Huge public attendance. Particularly, we're focusing on sort of more modern sports and supercars. But there's plenty of room also for 50s and 60s cars in there as well. It's a diverse event and always a very successful sale for us that's really integrated into the Goodwood event.
Fantastic. Well, I sadly don't think I'm going to be able to make it to Monaco to be able to be part of that auction, because I think that will be amazing. As much as I love Monaco, it's a lot going on at that time, unfortunately, with other bits and pieces. Real work, shall we call it. However, I will 100% definitely be with you at the Festival of Speed. Be amazing to see the cars that you've got going through the sale there. And hey, let's do this all over again. What do you think?
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm sorry you can't come to Monaco. You're very welcome. It's a great event, of course. But if not, we'll see you at Festival, and look forward to walking around the tent again with you and spotting, hopefully, some more successful sales.
Paul, it's actually called a marquee.
It's marquee. Yep. Sorry. Don't tell our PR department.
Paul, thank you so much. I'm going to let you now have a well-deserved glass of champagne. And see you next time.
See you next time. Cheers to that.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital.
We're back. I say we're back. Amy and I are back just following that lovely Bonhams content. Thank you so much for making it this far into the podcast. Our 100th episode. Andy has had to disappear. He's had to go and do more of that sort of boring grown-up work, leaving Amy and I. But again, I just wanted to jump in again. I'm not going to say another big gushy thank you. But what I will say is, for all of you that are listening and have enjoyed the content so far, if you are willing to leave us a lovely review, that would go down an absolute treat. And Amy has just alerted me to the fact that you can now rate us on Spotify.
Yes, because I'm a Spotify podcast listener. I'm not the usual ways of Apple whatevers. So yeah, Spotify can now give us the stars. Please give as many of the stars. We would thank you very much, and it would make us smile a lot if you would give us 5 of the stars.
5 of the stars is about as many as you can give. So max out on the stars. If you are one of those Apple people,
like me, and you are up for just writing some kind words, it does really, really genuinely does do amazing things for us. If it's the only thing you do to thank us for this podcast, if it's to write some nice words on the Apple Podcast reviews, it would be much appreciated. So, yeah, thank you for all of you that are just starting to do that now. I do appreciate, as I say every time, if you are listening to this in the car, like when I listen to podcasts, don't do that. Don't try and leave a review now. Just, you know, make a note, mental note to do it later on. Ah, it's exhausting, isn't it, all this podcasting, Amy Shaw?
I know, but I love it. I genuinely love it. And when people come up to me and say, hey, I listen to your podcast, I'm like, do you?
I do,
thanks.
Yeah. It's bizarre. I see the hundreds of thousands of listeners because I look at the stats. I am the one that uploads the files. Once Tom's put them all together, I upload the files onto our podcasting platform and write the copy for them and all that sort of stuff. So I see the insights, I see all the analytics, and every single time I'm like, oh, that's an impressive number. But then when one person comes up to me at an event and goes, oh, hi, yeah, just wanted to say hello and let you know that I listen to your podcast, I'm like, really?
Suddenly, it's like that they're real people. They're not just numbers on a screen, they're real people.
Yeah, they are real people. You, dear listener, are a real person. So thank you for being a real person. And thank you for everyone that has taken a moment to come and say hi at an event. I appreciate if you live in Australia or New Zealand, like Harrison does. Then, hi, Harrison. Then you won't be able to come over to us and say hi. But yeah, any kind of feedback you can provide via the internet would be just, yeah, much appreciated. And yeah,
I'm really excited to know who we're going to get on next, because we don't often know too far in advance who we're going to get on the podcast. So
no.
If anybody does have some suggestions saying, you know, I reckon this person's quite interesting, or have you thought about approaching this person, please do drop us an email at podcast@drivenchat.com and let us know, because we would like to talk to people you would like to listen to us talking to.
So true. And also, yeah, no, attack them on social media as well. Yeah. Attack in a very kind way. But yeah, tag us all in. If you're on Twitter, then tweet them and tweet us and say, hey, at insert celebrity automotive icon here, go on the Driven Chat podcast because John and Amy want to talk to you. And then, yeah, tag us all in and hopefully we can make that happen, because it is great. And we have done it. We have had people suggest names that have resulted in interviews. So if you want that to happen to your favourite automotive personality, please stop requesting JK. He doesn't return our calls.
No, I've tried.
Believe us, we've tried. It must be the most common, you know who'd be good for your podcast? JK. Yeah, he'd be great. Yeah, he manages himself, doesn't he, Amy? You kind of know him, don't you? It's cool.
Well, he basically had too many glasses of free champagne, I think, at a Goodwood event, and I'd been taking photographs of him all day. And then he was like, hey, how do I get these photographs from you? And I said, you know, have you got an agent or somebody that I could, you know, get in touch with to be able to drop them? He's like, if I had an agent, I wouldn't have all of these lovely cars. And he gave me his mobile number. Wow. And so then, since then, we have swapped a couple of text messages over lockdown. He would send me, I don't really know why, because I'm still a stranger to him, but I just think he was bored, very, very bored, and would just send anyone car related just videos of his cars, him walking around his cars, and because he's excited about them, he wants to talk about them. So then I was like, hey, funny that you've just sent me this video. I've got this new podcast that I've just started. Want to come and chat on it? And then I've not heard from him since. So Jay, if you're actually a secret fan, why don't you come on board?
Yeah, send Amy a text. Go on. I dare you. Right, let's leave you to it, dear listener. Thank you again for sticking with us right the way to the end of this episode. It always amazes me that people do, and you can do so. I'm going to test you by saying, if you go to our latest post on Instagram, I would like you to leave the comment of OMG 100 EPS.
How are we spelling EPS?
EPS.
Okay.
However, I will leave it to your creative control. You can add, you can detract, you can customize your message however you like, but as long as we can kind of interpret that you have heard this by leaving that sort of comment, and I love it when people do, it's really cool to see it. It really is. Right, shall we have a cup of tea and go about our normal daily lives and leave our dear listeners to go about their normal daily lives and listen to all the other car podcasts on a Monday?
Yes, and yeah, I just want you to have a really great day of your listening.
Oh, I also want you to have a great day. But Amy wants you to have a great day more than I do. Can't stress that. I couldn't care.
Bye.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Hold up. When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Oh, wow. You've made it to the end. The very end. And it's John Markar here again, reminding you that this podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now run its course and has come to an end. To find the new format, search the Driven podcast in your preferred podcast app, or head on over to the website driven.site to find some quick and easy links through to the new episodes in the new formats on your preferred apps. Thanks. Bye.